This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Got all sorts of stuff going on today. Things here in the Valley that we'll get to. The national overarching, overreaching story as we hit the airwaves, though, is O.J. Simpson is in his parole hearing. And this is something that transcended America. Those of you that are beneath the age of about 22, 23, this won't really resonate with you, but this had our country in grips for months. O.J. is sitting in a courtroom right now. Let's actually bring you the audio as his parole hearing is wrapping up. We'll find out if he's got to stay in prison or not.
Prison if we release them on parole. Using a risk assessment is not unique to Nevada, as a number of other state parole boards also use them. We have revalidated our assessment three separate times in the past 14 years, and it has consistently shown to be predictive. Using this risk assessment has significantly improved our overall performance. I'm going to go over each of those items with the risk assessment with you at this time. And just as an aside, this risk assessment is being revalidated even as we speak by the JFA Institute. So it's pretty darn predictive is the bottom line here. So my first question for you, Mr. Simpson, were you arrested for the first time at the age of 24 or older?
I was arrested for the first time, I think, at the age of 46 or 47.
Okay, so you were over the age of 24.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and am I correct that you have never been on parole or probation before, therefore you have never had a parole or probation revocation?
That is correct.
Okay, and I have that you were unemployed at the time of this offense because you were in retirement status.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Now, this is a property conviction. We're currently hearing you on the robberies and the enhancements. And so you have been assessed as a property offender. Now, we've also assessed you as having a substance abuse problem. I'll tell you why that is. You have indicated also in the past that alcohol had a big factor in this particular crime. And the fact that you have spent the last almost 9 years in prison because of an alcohol-related incident would be indicative of having some sort of a at least temporary substance abuse problem. So we have scored you with having some history there. We have you as male, and we have that you are currently, well, very recently turned 90 years old. 90, I'm sorry about that. You look great for 90.
Wow.
How about we take two decades off and call you 70? Okay. We don't have you as having any gang affiliation, nor has the NDOC found you to have any gang involvement. We do note that you have completed one of the vocational trainings in having completed the computer application course. We note that you have not had any disciplinaries, either current or pending, and that you're currently medium level there at Lovelock Correctional Center. Would you say that all of those items are correct, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you do score out, your risk score scores you in a low risk. However, because of your particular offense, that severity is the highest. When we combine your risk score along with your offense severity, our guideline recommendations are that we consider factors. Now, what consider factors means is we consider everything in terms of whether or not you're a risk to reoffend and return to our criminal justice system. And so what we do at this point, when we're looking at the risk score, we also look at what are called aggravating and mitigating factors. Now, aggravating and mitigating factors don't include everything in the world. They're very specific as to what we consider under those items also. So under the aggravating and mitigating factors in your particular case, we have mitigating or positive things for considering you for parole is the fact that you've been disciplinary free throughout your entire period of incarceration. You don't have any prior conviction history. You have community and family support. You have what appears to be stable release plans. You have participated in programming, some rather significant programming. On the aggravating factors, and the only thing that fits under our aggravating characteristics in terms of risk in your situation is that at the time of this offense, your victims indicated that they were in fear for their safety, having been threatened with a gun during the commission of a crime. So those are the risk, aggravating, mitigating things we are considering. That's your overall risk score. Right now, I'm going to stop talking for a while and ask the members of the panel if they might have any questions of you.
Yeah, Mr. Simpson.
All right, so that is the press conference that's going, or actually the hearing that's going on right now. And it's just gripping and fascinating on one hand. On the other hand, if they don't even know how old he is, come on. We have you listed here as 90. Looks pretty good for a 90-year-old. When they get back to the point where we feel as though there's some conclusion, we'll bring that back to you. To give you an idea here of why O.J. So back in the day when O.J. played with the Buffalo Bills and even at USC, there was none better. If we're just talking about someone, like today you see LeBron James doing Sprite commercials. That all started with O.J. Simpson running through airports and jumping over benches. Those of you over about the age of 30 know what I'm talking about. Hertz Rent-A-Car. That was O.J.'s first big deal. O.J. Simpson was one of the first athletes to be in movies and was just a big-time athlete star in this country. I would put him. Erica, do you think that's right on LeBron?
Like, oh, sure. Yeah, he was the original transcendent personality on and off the field. I mean, O.J. is not the original pitch man, but what he did in terms of advertising revenue along with playing revenue, he was known to the casual fan just as much for the Hertz rental cars and the other things that he pitched as he was the star running back.
Well, you know, it's like it went from O.J. to Michael Jordan, and then it went from Michael Jordan to a whole gaggle of people. You know, I'd say Peyton Manning had the title pitch man in our country for quite some time. Tom Brady has not really done a whole lot. The fact that he played for a little town like Buffalo and he did so well in Buffalo, but you couldn't go anywhere without hearing about O.J. Simpson. And then O.J. Simpson, a trial that did grip our country. And this was at a time where I was actually working over on the radio side. And the ratings for this every day, guys, give you an idea if you're not aware of this, every day they would carry the court hearings on the radio and on television for hours and hours. And when ESPN did their 30 for 30 documentary that ended up winning an Emmy Award, there's a reason why everybody's carrying OJ today. It brought ratings. People care, still care to this day. They're fascinated by it. And so when you have O.J. sitting there in Nevada, of course, this is completely separate from Nicole and the Goldmans and all of that, the white Bronco chase, everything we're familiar with, Johnny Cochran, so on and so forth, Cato Kaelin. There's just a whole bunch of character names that were thrown in on this. You tie it all together. This guy at 70 years of age where I'm hearing him speak this morning for the first time in, I don't know, 10 years, like O.J.'s on the radar today. OJ will be everywhere for the next few days analyzing this. If he gets out, just him going to memorabilia shows and signing autographs, he's going to do fine. He will do just fine. He does look old. He does look haggard. He does look run down. He does look like life has treated him very, very hard. There are people angling for that first ever interview with him. I remember staying with OJ Simpson at a place called the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad. He had a son, Jason, who ended up going to USC. Imagine being OJ's son. Really good running back in the day.
It's just one of those things, Brad, where we're so transfixed as a society on these polarizing athletes,
sure,
that rise to stardom and then crash. I mean, Tiger Woods, Pete Rose, OJ Simpson, the list just goes on and on. And just even 3 or 4 days ago, I saw ESPN and a couple other networks recycling all the ESPN 30 for 30 docs on O.J. Made in America, and that was leading up to this morning, and that was 4 or 5 days ago. That's how big this day is, this event. And it's, you know, people, it brings in not just the sports fans, but the casual observers as well.
All right, we're going to go back to this now because OJ looks like he's really ramping up. So here's a little bit more. This is live inside the courtroom for his parole hearing in Nevada.
The two guys, they also met us there, which was a big mistake, obviously. I realized that quite soon after this. And Mr. Riccio led us to his room, put the key in the door, and let us in. I know I've seen the last two or three days the media reporting we broke in the room. Well, we didn't break in any room. Mr. Riccio brought us into that room. When I came into the room, I noticed spread out everywhere was my personal property. You know, the only thing I saw that was on display that wasn't mine was some baseballs, and I made it clear to everybody, those are not mine. All I want is my property, and I think there's a tape of it. You hear me on at least three or four occasions say, I just want my property. Go forward and try to make it a little quicker. At some point, we started, when we're leaving the room, actually I was being pushed out of the room by the security guys, because while I was in there and I recognized Bruce was there, I was surprised to see him as he testified. I was shocked, really, to see him. Bruce has been a friend of mine. He's traveled with me. We've done a lot of business together over the years. And he and I said, man, what are you doing here? You know, he explained to me why he was there and why he had my property there. And I told him, but geez, you should have told me. I accepted, I understood why. You know, it was a 06, 07. People were losing their homes. A guy owed him money, couldn't pay him the money, gave him my property to sell. I told him I understood that, but you still should have told me. We had a chance to talk about this at a later date, and he apologized. I accepted his apology. I apologized for these two guys that got pointed a gun at him. He's traveled with me. He's known me when I've had security. He's known me when the venue has supplied security, and there were times he even had to act as security for me. He knows I would never, ever direct anybody to point a gun at him or even threaten him. I've never done this in my life. And I want to point out, you mentioned all those gun charges. Bruce and Alfred, they made it clear during the trial that I had no weapon. They didn't feel threatened by me, and from what you said, and that I didn't threaten them. It was the other two security guys that did that. And I haven't made any excuses in the 9 years that I've been here. And I'm not trying to make an excuse now. They were there because of me, you know. But in no way, shape, or form did I wish them any harm. As I was leaving the room, and this was on the tape too, Bruce said, OJ, hey man, there's a box that's with that stuff. They're Montana prints. Those don't belong to you. Those are mine, man. He told me that because he recognized everything else that I took out of that room was mine, you know? And he also recognized that I wasn't.
All right, so he's going to go through his explanation there. We're going to get some other things in the next segment. And when it comes time for the decision here on his parole or not, we'll get back to that. Goody at the Movies comes up at about 10:50. Bill Goody-Kunz will be with us. We're going to talk about Dunkirk and some other things as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show tonight, Brad Sismat Football AZ with 16 airings this week. We're brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. Appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support. All right, welcome back. So on this Thursday, a few other things going on. Diamondbacks are winning right now at Cincinnati. I was watching J.D. Martinez last night. Eric, you've been gone, so you have not been able to jump in on any of this stuff. J.D. Martinez comes to the Diamondbacks, and I felt like it was a real strong message sent by ownership to do something. And then last night he gets plunked. I know you were traveling yesterday.
I did see the highlights this morning, though, of him getting drilled. And I do think it was a good trade for the Diamondbacks because the Diamondbacks can't hit left-handers, and he can. So we'll see how that turns out, hopefully. His hand is all right. Sounds like it's not fractured or anything. Kind of a day-to-day thing.
Are we sitting here like we're going to have a baseball team in the pennant race? And they lost again last night.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think they're falling apart? Like, well, Greinke was not good last night.
They might be falling apart, but they're still in the pennant race. And we're almost into August. This is all, every day that we get closer to the end of the season is uncharted waters since, 2011, I believe, was the last time they made the postseason?
So I'm watching them, and And I feel as though every time Greinke goes out, if I'm paying $33 million, then I've got to get 8-9 innings. I can't have 5 innings and 102 pitches. And I know during the course of a year, you're not going to have great starts. His start coming off the All-Star break, and I get it. He pitched before the break. He flies down to Florida. He does his thing down there. He has some days off. And his last night, it's hot, it's muggy, it's humid. It's not good for anybody to be out there. But if there was ever a time to try to take to sweep out Cincinnati, last night you've got your ace on the hill, and you've got the Cubs charging very hard. The Cubs are coming at the Diamondbacks. They're coming at them very hard. And I just feel as though I've got to see more out of him. I've not seen like a run here since June 1st of the Zach Greinke that I'm used to seeing.
And as of right now, the Diamondbacks are behind the Rockies by a half game in the wild card, which is kind of crazy to think about. And they were 21 games over 500, 20 games over 500. Now they're only 14. It's nice that we can say only 14 games over 500, but the heightened expectations, I mean, everyone around here is completely buying into this Diamondbacks fever.
I'm sitting here today, and I've got an eye on OJ, obviously, but I'm sitting here today like, okay, is there another shoe that's got to drop? You've got this load of a contract for Yasmani Tomas. It feels like they need another pitcher. Taiwan Walker has been put on paternity leave, so he's gone for at least a start or two.
Yep, that's why Patrick Corbin got the start today.
Right, and so you look at that and say, all right, I get it, it's July. You're not going to blow the race here, but if you go for this extended slump, if they win today's game, you win 2 of 3 of Cincinnati, you come home. They lose today, they've dropped 5 of 6 to start out the second half of the season. And oh, by the way, Max Scherzer and Strasburg and the Nationals are here next. That's not good, and Greinke's not going to throw in that series. So that leads up to everything pointing towards an extended, longer losing streak, which is not good. You know, you don't want to see that. And how long is J.D. Martinez going to be out? If it's just today and he comes back tomorrow, are they going to be cautious with him? I thought his first at-bat last night, he was trying to hit a 10-run home run. He fumbled around a ball in the outfield. There's heightened expectation. This is the first time that he's come into a new place. So maybe he's pressing a little bit. I don't know, but...
Isn't it great that Brad see the Diamondbacks adding a piece this time of
year?
Oh, my
gosh.
When was the last time they actually were buyers and not sellers around the deadline?
I was talking yesterday about how, and just in very little terms on this, how it feels like people are starting to figure it out here outside of the Cardinals in the Valley. You know, the Cardinals start tomorrow, and we're not just sitting here saying, oh, my gosh, what a great football season. We actually have a baseball team that's interesting, that's competitive, that's in a race, that has some people buzzing. We actually, I think, have some ownership issues of stability over with the Coyotes. I don't know if Barraway is going to lose his mind like everybody else has over there. But you don't bring Steve Patterson in as a shot in the dark. I think that's been a good move on their behalf. I'm sitting there yesterday with the Suns, and we'll hear from Robert Sarver in the next segment on this. Well, I'm hearing from Robert Sarver yesterday, like, who is this guy? I'll get to that shortly. I think the MLS situation is going to happen here, that the ownership group that is over there, to this point, they're staying in their lanes. It's a complicated group of guys. There's a lot of people in that ownership group. And whenever you have a lot of voices, it only takes one or two to get out of lane, and all of a sudden that thing blows up. To this point, I believe they're going to get it done. So there's just some optimism that I've got going on around town. Beyond that, it's the start of the Open Championship in golf today, which is big. And Todd Graham's going to talk today at 11 o'clock. He's showing off his new football facilities over at ASU. It's great that they have facilities to show off. It's going to attract recruits. You would hope that there'd be this initial buzz if you're an ASU fan. It's much like when U of A had Eric and I down and Greg Byrne when he was AD back then and Rich Rod, and they gave us the big grandiose tour, and we're like, wow, this is amazing. This is awesome. And hasn't really resulted in anything. Okay, they had their Fiesta Bowl run a couple of years ago, but if we're talking about the Wildcats in football, I don't know, wherever I go, all they want to do is talk to me about basketball. So you can have facilities and you'll have that initial buzz and that initial run, but it all comes down to being on the field and what they can do at ASU. All right, up next, we're going to circle back on Robert Sarver from yesterday. This was after the mainstream was over. We brought him a little bit more to you. I was able to catch up with him one-on-one. We'll have some of that, and then Goody at the movies. Keeping an eye on OJ, too. The parole hearing is still going on. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, so OJ is still going and going and going and going. Our broadcast studios here, everybody is watching what's going on, and they all are coming up their own summations. I'm sitting here just doing my thing, and OJ's coming off as crazy, Eric? Is that where we're starting to ascertain?
Yeah, pretty much crazy. OJ, quote, "I am a good guy," end quote, "I lived a conflict-free life."
What?
Well, what is your description of good, and how would you break down conflict-free life?
Wow.
Compared to Charles Manson, yeah, probably you did lead a pretty conflict-free life. But
he's talking a lot, from what I can...
Yeah, he's just...
He's all over the place.
Less is more, OJ, please.
Yeah, so...
Less is more.
So
still waiting. I mean, this thing started, 35 minutes ago, and he's still talking. So we don't have a verdict.
This is not Shawshank. No. This is not Shawshank.
No.
When they walk in and here's the thing, denied.
No, this is
so get along with it, Sonny. You know, so we want to see them just stamp it. That's not how it works in real life. These people didn't even know how old he was, which I thought was the best part of this. Goody at the movies here in a few minutes. So Robert Sarver yesterday, those of you that watched this show for the last 5 years know that at the top of my list of people I've been frustrated with and not happy with here in the Valley has been the Suns owner. There's been some things that he has done that make you believe, okay, he's finally starting to figure it out. And then he takes like 10 steps back. How he's handled Ryan McDonough here recently, I feel as though he's got it going in the right direction. They do have a nice young core. I can see the correlation between what Golden State accomplished and what the Suns are accomplishing. And I know they've not accomplished much in the way of wins and losses, but I think all the mismanagement by Robert after Nash left, after Amari left, that it's just not that easy. And long story short, I've not been happy with him. So yesterday, I finally, when I saw that he was speaking, because he never speaks, it was on me to take the show down there. Let's go. Let's do the show. And let me see if I can get some access to him. So I was able to get to Robert. This was after the press conference yesterday where he was an open book. And actually, I think from a fan standpoint, I know you guys are frustrated with the direction of that team. I know it, as have I. But I felt like yesterday there was a little bit of a turning of the ship. And I was told afterwards, this wasn't like scripted or anything. This was Robert. So here it is, Robert Sarver and myself.
I've known you since you came here and from day one. And today you sat up there and you sounded like a completely different person in terms of ownership, in a way of admitting, look, it's easy when you have Steve Nash. You talked about Mike D'Antoni and you've learned a lot. I mean, I just think, Robert, today was a big day, I thought.
Well, I don't know. Maybe because I was out there more public.
I think
over time you learn, and I've been in this business now 13 years.
Right.
If I haven't learned, shame on me. I will say it's a difficult business. You come and watch a game and they throw the ball up and there's five guys playing and a couple coaches and you think it looks pretty simple. But when you actually get behind it, it's not. So you learn as you go. You try to be self-reflective and you try to be intellectually honest with yourself. And one good thing about sports, and, you know, I run a public company too on the New York Stock Exchange.
Right.
When your results are in the paper every day, you know, it is what it is. And so, that's one of the great things about professional sports. You know, every day you see where you're at.
It was interesting because as the press conference is going, I'm seeing fans say, this is a different sounding owner. In years past, we would have had change and change and going different directions.
Sometimes that change was needed for different reasons. But I think I feel better about my ability to run this organization. And maybe that's the sense you got.
Yeah.
You heard me on the press conference.
No, you were just...
And I also feel I'm surrounded with some really good people, and I think we're in a good place right now.
Yeah, well, extending Ryan, let's get to Ryan then, because we talked about James. So when did you decide, you know, what this... Because you have to earn that respect and earn that trust. When did you decide okay, let's extend him because...
Well, Ryan and I kind of had a handshake a while ago, so it wasn't something that just happened last week, but it's something we just finalized. You know, when you work with someone for 4 years, you get to know them pretty good. And, you know, as I said up there, Ryan's got a good eye for basketball talent. He's growing as a manager of people and as a leader, which isn't easy, takes time. And he's self-reflective, and he takes ownership for his mistakes. He learns from them, and Ryan's going to continue to get better.
Okay, so that was yesterday, and I felt like Sarver talking in terms of this wasn't just lip service. The first few minutes of that interview, we went about 12, 15 minutes. I watched it back last night. The first few minutes of it, he wasn't engaged, and it's not a fault of his. He's just looking around the room like, okay, I got to do this thing, this media thing, whatever. And then you could see that he started getting into the process, and he just hasn't been around. I wouldn't say absentee owner. I wouldn't say that. He just has not talked about where he is and what he's done. And I saw Izzy Central today, and Scott Bordeaux was down there yesterday, and Greg Moore, their new columnist. They were both talking about the direction of the organization, where it's going. Anybody who says that they are not building something here is mistaking themselves. You're just wanting to live in where it was 15 years ago. And I've probably been guilty of that to a point. Everything, when you change an owner, it's not like it used to be. It's not the good old days. But when things go so bad, so wrong, and so many missteps are made, and around town you're hearing of things that just are unacceptable from an ownership standpoint, and nothing's being addressed, and it's a revolving door in the president's office or people in their front office, and things are just not handled right. Yeah, that's when I'm going to be really grumpy, because it impacts you. You're the one that's being told, hey, come watch us. We're really great. Hey, come watch us. We're really great. And in town, I see the TV ratings. Nobody's watching them. Very few people are watching them. I should say zero, but very few people like it used to be. When I hear this, well, it's never going to be like it used to be. No, that's not true. That's not true. The NFL team went to a Super Bowl. And then the NFL team was awful. And then the NFL team rallied back, and we'll see this year. I think around town, the feeling about the NFL team that has their run test tomorrow and starts this weekend is, they're going to be okay, but they're not going to compete for Super Bowl. Carson's too old. Larry's at the end of the run. Yeah, they've got a very good running back. What about Arian's future and all that? I think there's a lot of trepidation. Fandom can change that. Fandom, especially in this town, if team starts out 3-0, then everybody and their brother is going to say, see, I told you so. I've seen that. But I think you've got to believe in the guy at the top. There was a time where the Cardinals, no one believed in what was going on at the top. And then there's a stretch where they do believe it's going on at the top. And I think right now it's kind of mixed. I don't think there's 100% unification on this football team getting started tomorrow. So there's that side of it. I think on the basketball side of things, very few people believe in where Robert is. I kind of shifted yesterday. It's like, okay, is this some PR spin? No, it wasn't. It was just Robert being Robert. When he said, he said something about Ryan McDonough. Yeah, we're happy Ryan's going to stick around. That's Robert Sarver. Just kind of flip. It's not the best way, in my view, to refer to employees, but that's the way that he's done his thing. It's kind of like when Andrew Barraway last week with the Coyotes, I'm sitting there and I don't know him from Adam or Andrew. And he turns to John Chyka and their new general manager who's been here over a year. And he says, yeah, it's great that he's sticking around and we didn't have to give him a pay increase. And there was just this uncomfortable groan within the room. Like, do you really have to go out of your way to make a crack that implies you don't want to pay more than what you're paying? Fans don't want to hear that stuff. And so yesterday on social media, I started getting this, who's this Robert Sarver that we're seeing today? Fans are like, what? And then there's always this guy's not going to change his spots. This is who he is. This is not good. Brad, don't buy into the hype. I'm not saying there's hype here. I'm just saying you have to believe at the top that this organization is going in the right way. And I think the moves that they've made through the draft, getting James Jones yesterday doesn't mean LeBron James is coming here. Anybody who's writing that or thinking that, that's just chasing clicks. That's not what we're about. Does he know him? Sure. Can he pick up the phone? Call him? Sure. Does that mean he's going to be able to recruit players? Yes, he can go recruit players. I'm not expecting James Jones being hired, a minor note in transactions, as what's going to turn around the whole team. Right, Goody at the Movies is next. We're going to talk with Bill about OJ, because I'm sure he's all over it, too, watching this. We'll talk to him, too, about Dunkirk. We've both seen it and much, much more. That's on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, and Dunkirk, Bill's already given it 5 stars, but he's got to explain why, because he never, ever does that. It's Goody at the Movies. Full disclosure, I'm watching OJ with one eye in his hearing. The other side, I hear you're on the back roads of North Carolina enjoying your summer. I do know that you did see Dunkirk, because I read your review. It's great. Where do you want to start, OJ or Dunkirk?
I want to start with Keaton's Barbecue, because that's where you should look it up.
Ooh.
I just ate there. It's in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina, but it ends up in all these gourmet magazines. And I have not eaten there in 27 years, and I just ate there just now.
Good barbecue, huh?
it's some fried chicken. It's worth looking up. It truly is.
Keaton's Barbecue. If you were to get barbecue in Phoenix, what would be comparable to Keaton's?
There's nothing comparable anywhere that I know of. It's like this deep, kind of pressurized, cooked, and they dip it in this sauce, and it's great.
I love that. Because I'm a barbecue aficionado as well. OJ, his hearing's going on right now, Bill, and I don't know if you've been listening to it in your drives today or even care about it, but I was trying to explain to the audience just how big a deal it was back in the day, and I'm hearing him say he doesn't have a problem, and it's sad on one hand, but on the other hand, it's this part of Americana that you do have to watch or consume. Can you put in kind of terms what OJ following it means?
I think the thing that's important about OJ is not just, I mean, he is typically the quick answer when you think who fell the farthest, what famous athlete fell the farthest. You know, like when Tiger Woods has his problems and stuff. Tiger Woods has problems. He didn't kill anybody. I mean, he didn't, you know, and maybe OJ didn't either, but it seems fairly certain that he did. But it's not just in terms of like a celebrity gone bad. OJ was important in terms of media. He changed forever the way that stuff was covered. It is routine now.
Oh.
The lowest Kardashian on the way to the supermarket or whatever.
Oh, man. Bill's on a roll, and we're losing him. Bill, Eric, you can check back with him. You can check back with him. It's fine. Have him pull over. OJ saying that he basically spent a conflict-free life, I think, has been what the biggest – I'm looking at Twitter right now, and there's nothing else that's even come close to OJ in our country at this moment as we're sitting here doing our thing. This would be like me doing a show opposite the Super Bowl. Everybody is watching OJ, and everybody's commenting about OJ. Although there's a few that you want me to get back into reading some of your tweets about the Suns and all that stuff. But I think it's important on a day like today where if it's O.J. Simpson parole and O.J. parole, those are the two biggest deals that are going on. And to give some context to what this was like and to give you kind of a feel of what it was like in our country, because as Bill said, I think that's very well put. I hadn't even thought of it in those terms. You guys watch courtroom TV stuff now all the time. Courtroom drama is just like a staple within our society. And when you have stuff like that's going on, it just takes over. All right, you're back with us now. So I get it. You're in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. but you were talking about how court coverage in our country really changed off of OJ. If you're on a rant about that, so continue if you can.
Every not just court coverage, but celebrity coverage. As I was saying, I mean now it's nothing to follow the least of the Kardashians, to the supermarket or whatever. But back then, I mean, as you recall, I remember I was at the airport waiting to pick somebody up. The NBA finals were on. They broke in and showed OJ, and it was sort of amazing, and it was not necessarily for the good, you know, obviously not for the good for him, but we really started to really put a lot of emphasis on this kind of thing. And now, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole generation of people that's like, you know, that says, what's the big deal? But the thing that's interesting, the thing that's even more interesting about OJ is, even when all that media stuff was going on, even when that was huge, there was a whole generation then that didn't realize what a great football player he was.
Right.
You know, he wasn't just this kind of good player. And at the time, he was easily one of the five best running backs in the history of football, right? I mean,
no question. No question. And growing up in Southern California, for me, his son played at the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad. And you would have thought, speaking of Kardashians, it would have been like the biggest thing ever. This is tiny little 1A program, and here's OJ's little, his son, doing his thing. And so I'm right in the middle of that. And then I'm on the air when the white Bronco stuff's going down. And we all know where we were when the Bronco stuff happened, but the Hertz commercials and how he was the first athlete that really went, I'd say, outside of the country even, doing some marketing stuff. That was OJ. That was before LeBron, before Michael. He set the bar on a lot of fronts.
He did. And now, of course, you hear, you know, when he has his troubles, you hear that, oh, he wasn't that great a guy or whatever. But that was another thing that people didn't know back then. You didn't know everything about everybody.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. All right, let's get over to Dunkirk, because I don't want to lose you. So this movie, I saw it in IMAX. Were you there the other night, or have you been gone? You've been out?
I saw it in North Carolina.
Okay. So I'm in IMAX the other night at Mills, and you talk about a movie that you've got to see in IMAX. There are people covering their ears because it was so strong. But walk me through, because you don't give 5 stars very often. Why this movie? Why now?
I just thought it did everything it set out to, and then some. I thought that, I mean, it's a story. I got some grief from readers that, like, well, this is a real spoiler about. And it's like, look, this was a battle that was fought in 1940. You can't, you know, there are history books. You can't really spoil World War II. But I think it could have been a fairly straightforward story. He tells, you know, the story of three different perspectives of people in the who are part of this massive operation, but he did it in a Christopher Nolan way. Not only does he jump around among perspectives, he jumps around in time. And not only does he jump around in time, he jumps around in time within each of the perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds confusing, but it really isn't. I mean, it takes some getting used to. I will acknowledge that. But I just thought it was a really intriguing way to tell the story. And I thought, on the technical front, it's just a marvel. I mean, the one of the reasons those dogfights look so realistic in these old British Spitfires is because they mounted a camera in a Spitfire. And Christopher Nolan is really known for, like, there's not a lot of special effects in his movies. He goes out there and he builds these massive sets, and he puts 50,000 people out on a beach or whatever. And you can really tell, I thought.
So this movie was shot at Dunkirk. My daughter, I took her, and she's 22 and would know these things. As soon as we got out of the movie, she opened up her phone and went to History versus Hollywood, which is a website, right? And you're aware of that one, right?
Yeah.
And so she goes to it and starts going through everything that was historically fact versus what Hollywood did with the movie. And there was not much in the way of change. This is not based on those four storylines were not based on true stories from what she read.
Right, they're fictional.
Yeah, they're all fictional. All four of them are fictional. The characters are all fictional. But what happened in terms of capturing the moment, Christopher Nolan capturing what it was like over there, was historically true, that there were these incidents that did happen. There was the guy that landed his plane on the beach that ran out of fuel. Sorry to give away some of the movie, but that's as much as I'm going to give away.
I think that's perfect. I talked to Nolan, actually, and I said, you know, you got 400,000 people on the beach. How do you decide what stories to tell?
Right.
And he said, you have 400,000 possible stories because everybody's just different.
Yep.
And he said you want to go for what will give you the biggest sort of universal, as you say, sort of depiction of the historical moment. And I thought he did. And that cutting, by the way, it reminded me kind of like in like a mystery novel or something. Like you build up and then he cuts away. And it's like, oh.
Right.
Like, what happened there? And then you got to go. And I talked to him about that. And it's this, I cannot think of the word, but he said that since the prestige. He's used this musical. His music people have used this effect called the something effect. I can't think of it. But you start at the low part of an octave and you build up. And then right when you get up to the top of the octave, you kind of fade that out and you start at the bottom again. And it gives like this sort of barbershop pole effect where it sounds like you're constantly going up. And he said that's what he wanted to try, writing a story like that, where it's, you know, as soon as that builds, it fades out, then something else builds up. And as you can tell, he's a pretty smart guy.
Well, and Bill, I think it's important for people to know this on this movie. There's not an ounce of blood that I saw dropped other than a scene within a boat where a young man has something happen to him. And that's it. There's not arms flying off. This is not Hamburger Hill. There's none of that that's going on here. And so if you're one of those that gets queasy about blood and body parts, you don't need to do that here. I think it's an important movie to understand this actually did happen. Go ahead.
It's one of those. It's one of those things that where, and again, without. I mean, I don't really think you can spoil it because it is pretty. It's certainly in Britain. It's one of, but it turns a big defeat into a kind of like inspirational victory. You know, you hear about in sports and all this stuff like a moral victory. This is pretty much the definition of a moral victory, and it inspired Churchill. You know, perhaps his most famous speech, which we hear. You know, we will fight them on the shores and on the beaches and on, you know, and all that, And it's really fitting. And I think you're right. I've had some parents ask me, can I take my kids? I say, absolutely.
Yes. Can take your kids. There's not swearing. Yet, there's not much swearing, if any swearing, in this movie.
While there is no real bloodshed, you certainly get the idea of what kind of danger they're in.
Yes.
And you get the idea when they hear those German planes and they're fitted with those sirens that make that noise, you get the idea of how scary that was. And, I mean, you really do. And I just thought it was just really well done. In just about every way, particularly in like really putting you there in the middle of it.
All right, before you get out of here, Ghost Story. What about Ghost Story?
People, I'm going to tell people to go see it, and they're going to hate it. It's basically Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara are this couple, and he dies in a car crash, and he comes back as a ghost. But he's like a Charlie Brown-looking ghost. He's got a sheet over his head with like two little eye holes. But what he does is he just kind of watches her from the corner of the house. He can move around in the house. But it's not just her. He can sort of go back in time and through the time and stuff like that. And it has a lot to do with, like, loss and grieving and all that stuff. But parts of it are kind of funny. But it is very, shall we say, patient. Mm. And it will test your patience. There's one scene where he's watching her, his widow, and she's obviously very sad. And she sits down and eats an entire pie. And he just sits there and shows this. He just shows the whole, you know, sitting there eating the pie. It's stuff like that. And it's like some people, I think, if you're willing to give it a chance, you'll like it, I think. But you got to sort of give it a good go, an honest chance. But a lot of people are really going to hate it.
This is a camel view?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it ever?
Yeah. All right. I'll let you go off that. Safe travels. Thanks for the time.
Thanks.
All right. Bye. See you later. This is Bill Goodykins. It's Goody at the Movies. We have anything with OJ, Eric, in the last 20 minutes? Or is it just OJ still being crazy?
Well, let's check in. Let's see what's going on here.
All right. Let's.
I bring up this recorded conversation because I reviewed it in anticipation of this hearing, and that was from 2011.
All right, they're still
as
going.
Stated before.
Yeah, that's OJ's attorney, and he's talking, there's nothing new.
There's nothing new. We were hoping for, like, you know, here's Shawshank, approved, denied.
We've been doing this almost an hour, and we know about as much as we did when we started an hour ago. So.
I could put Watkus on today, but I was going to say it because Mike covered OJ, was at every last bit of OJ, and Mike is in demand today nationally. And so one other thing before we get out of here. So Senator McCain has been diagnosed with a brain tumor. It is not terminal. He's already, his camp put out this morning on social media, I look forward to getting back after those people and so on and so forth. I don't care what side we sit on here in aisles. It's a human being's life. Okay. And yes, Senator McCain comes on the show and he talks sports, but obviously our thoughts and our prayers are with him. Tomorrow, the Cardinals have their run test. The Diamondbacks are playing a day game. And that's about it. It's going on today locally. And high schools get started next week, which is fun. And ASU is, Todd Graham's going to talk today for a little bit too. I want to thank our sponsors for being part of the show. As always, without their support, we are not doing this. So thanks to them. And please support them. We are self-funded. It's just me doing this. And we've been at it almost 6 years. So appreciate that. And Edwin Rodriguez helping out Jared Nielsen today. And Eric being back in the saddle. Good to have him back. And, of course, happy anniversary to he and his lovely bride. I am Brad Sussmat. Enjoy your day. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.